everyone to a typing podcast. In the background, we'll hear Jason and Ryan type.
Why do you have to make it awkward, man?
Because that's what I do best.
It's the best podcast.
So welcome, everyone. Yes, that sounds good.
That's what you say every week.
So welcome, everyone, including Jason. Oh, wait.
Are you going to do this for an hour? So welcome, everyone. So welcome, everyone. So welcome, everyone. So welcome, everyone.
No one gets to hear the beauty of the actual intro. They just hear the one smooth, like, Marcel coming out of the music, like, welcome, everyone.
They don't hear 10 minutes of him fucking up, like, nah, we're not using that. The rest of us is like, oh, God, just start the cast.
Oh. Nah, I like it. You got to get it right. You can't mess it up for the people. So let's let Marcel truly introduce the cast now.
So welcome, everyone, to another special episode of Rainstorm Brewery. My name is Jason E. Alt.
They were confused for a second because they thought you were actually me because that's how I fucking talk.
So welcome, everyone, to another lovely special episode of Brainstorm Brewery. It's going to be awkward silence before we introduce the other hosts.
Aha. Break the silence. Who am I, Marcel?
This guy that you hear, because I'm Marcel because he addressed me, right? So this guy that you're hearing here is a finance guru. They know him as the Fabio of the finance community.
Oh, no. No, that's not a thing. My hair is not even long anymore.
Oh, don't be so bashful. You know, don't try to downplay it.
I mean, do have some gorgeous hair.
The girls swoon over him, and when he puts on his stunner shades, you just better deal with it. Ryan Bouchard.
Oh, thank you. Excellent. And our excellent, other excellent host, Jason E. Alt.
Yep, that's what he does on the mic, all right. So Jason is better known, he's better known on the Money Draft because that's where he actually does his good stuff.
Oh, come on. Don't accuse me of bringing my A game there because people will expect me to step it up now. I'm not really prepared to put forth any effort on Money Draft. Let's not start getting people's hopes up.
Well, it's already apparent, so you already set the standard low, so would they expect more from you? Standard's not at a low, though. We just had a pro tour, and we missed last week, so we want to say sorry. And Corbin, he was out there in Hawaii hanging out with all the pros, doing the pro tour coverage.
We're just blaming the fact that we missed it all on Corbin, right? Because he's also not here this week.
Oh, the sickest burns. He does not have the time for our listeners otherwise, but we are here for you guys. We're here to ensure that we're going to bring the best cast. But now with Corbin, he has a bad, I guess he got sick on the plane. So whatever Ryan contracted, he gave it to one of the plane passengers that Corbin caught.
Hashtag he did have a stopover in Dallas, so maybe he got Ebola.
Maybe he got it. I know what I have is not Ebola. I'm not bleeding from in my ears or anything like that yet, so we're good to go. But yeah, no, Corbin, super lame. Not on the podcast once again. And beyond being sick, I mean, so speaking of the Pro Tour, he had the first-hand coverage, though. And I am excited to get him on next week and talk a little bit about that. It'd be nice to have him this week to talk about it, but I'm sure we'll be doing a little more Pro Tour discussions next week as well.
See, Corbin's just too good for us. These guys are official Wizards of the Coast coverage team shirts with the polos with the embroidery. So, I think we might have to step our game up so that Corbin will want to come back here.
So we need to get polos?
Would people buy Brainstorm Brewery polos? Let us know. That's the thing we could make happen. People requested hoodies. We got hoodies. I'm wearing mine right now. If you guys want polos, I don't know. That seems like a Money Draft kind of thing.
Yeah, totally a JR. His rich guy shirt. I can see him right now.
Yep. The polo shirt would be the one you tear off to reveal the more expensive shirt underneath when it's time to fight.
And while we're at it, who's the guy that made that the shot, the glam shot you guys had?
Oh man, I don't know, but it's over. There's no coming back from that.
I gotta find you guys. See, this is the most amazing Photoshop picture I've seen in a long time.
We're talking way more about Money Draft than we are about Brainstorm Brewery, but I'm fine with that. We're feuding with Heavy Meta.
we'll have a picture in the show notes. We don't want to give you guys any more exposure than that. So let's move on to this Pro Tour.
That's quite a segue to and from the Pro Tour. Are you finally ready to talk about it?
I think so.
It was Offensive MTG, by the way. I just looked it up. So let's shout out the correct person.
Shout out to Offensive MTG for the most amazing artwork. It was the most amazing glam shot, I think, on the planet. You can't get better than that. So, Ryan, I actually had a bad week when it came to Magic. Yeah, I've just been so busy. I got to play a little bit of Khan's draft, like, last week. I had a break in my work that allowed me to play. But other than that, I kind of been on the fringe. I got to see one match of the Pro Tour when Jeskai Ascendancy actually won on camera and made it to the top eight, I believe, or just to the top eight. So you want to tell us about what went on and some of the awesomeness?
So I actually missed a lot of coverage too initially. I just re-caught up in the last couple of days. I've been sick for the past week or so. So I did catch the top eight coverage live, but everything else I had to rewatch. There was a pretty sweet See the Unwritten deck that's kind of like, I don't want to call it a breakout deck because it didn't exactly perform the best, but it's kind of just a cool new take on the card. Saw a lot of financial implications from that immediately, and it's already kind of settled back down. Outside of that, like, we had a couple of blue-black and, like, Esper control decks pop up. There was a red-white tokens did okay. There was a couple of lists on that. And then red-green monsters and Tamir monsters outside of the obvious, you know, Jeskai wins now, I guess they're calling it, and Abzan midrange. There was also, I guess, the devotion decks. They're like the black-green enchantment Eidolon decks. There was a couple of those around. There wasn't really, like I said, outside of the See the Unwritten deck and maybe like red-white tokens, there wasn't anything that was like brand new that nobody had seen. It seemed like most people really kind of figured out the format the first couple of weeks here this time around. I'm sure there will be a little more evolution. I'm still expecting a five-color deck to crop up here soon enough. But, yeah, we really – everything's kind of based on these. Even the See the Unwritten deck really just looks a lot like these Abs and mid-range decks. It's pretty much the same thing. You're just running more creatures, and you're kind of using See the Unwritten to, like, go over the top and get, you know, double up on creatures, stuff like that. Things like Hornet Queen and Wingmate Rock, stuff like that. So I don't think there's, like, a ton – to talk about as far as, oh my goodness, you know, this is a deck that just nobody saw coming and dominated. But there's definitely some cool lists that are, you know, setting themselves in tier two right now that I expect to see some of them break through, you know, kind of get changed up a little bit and make it up to tier one.
I think one thing that we have to talk about is how on our financial set review, we all missed Dig Through Time. Ryan wasn't there, so he kind of liked the card. But none of us saw this becoming a $20 card. And now it's back down to what, $7-$8 on TCG?
Yeah, it took the quick rise and fall. It's back to right around 10 right now. I think it's 11 mid, but there are copies as low as 7. One that I do have to point out though, because I was the only person who gave this card any credit at all, was Pearl Lake Agent. I definitely didn't think it was as playable as it apparently is, but I'm glad to see that card getting a little love because it definitely reminds me. It's a very good homage to like the old Morphling style. Just grind your opponent out, play this. Doesn't matter how many times they try and kill it. Like just, you know, over the course of 30 turns, you're going to win with it.
It's so really ballsy of you to call this 3 weeks after the set review and 1 week after it went up.
No, I said it in the set review.
You weren't on the set review episode.
Then when there was something I talked about. We
you weren't even there,
card.
Man.
It must have been an article.
Then it was when the card got spoiled or something. Because we definitely talked about this. Yeah, yeah, we definitely talked about it. Everyone just like, you're crazy. And I was pretty sure I was wrong, too. I was like, if Prognostic Sphinx is still bulk, this is probably going to stay bulk, but I really like the card. So not saying I was 100% right or anything, but I'm glad that like a card that I put a little faith in got there.
Well, it's interesting because on paper it shot up from $1 to $5 to almost $6, and now it's settling around $4. Where on online it was about 80 cents, it shot up to almost $4, and now it's $1.20. So the hype is gone online, but the hype is still there in paper.
But real life prices just take longer to adjust.
Yeah, they don't come down as quickly in paper because you can't get out instantly the way you can on Magic Online. So like there are bots set up to buy, whereas on TCG Player, you have to like list them and you have to have a buyer. So if you bought in at above $1, you know, hoping to sell for like $5 or $6, that's the greater fool theory at work, I think. I think a lot of greater fools got burned this time around because prices were more volatile than we've really seen at other Pro Tours. You know, we had a lot fewer orders get canceled than we did a Pro Tour or Theros, but I think prices were pretty volatile this time around. I didn't say that to make you guys feel awkward and not say anything.
Oh, well.
Sorry, I'm chewing up.
You got it. So speaking of awkward and terrible segues, how about we just jump into Finance 101 before we forget to do that?
Oh, that was artless and jarring. I love it. Those are my favorites.
Yes, that's my style.
Yeah, so Finance 101 is going to be some of the cars that we talked about. This is called the Pro Tour Hype Train. Choo-choo comes around every time, but mostly during the fall sets. But now as we move on into the new way that the blocks are going to be, and they're going to be every 6 months, we're going to be having this hype train happen every 6 months for sure. Of every new set release. Now, this is, you know, the common cycle is, you know, the cars get released. Some people are able to make their wild specs. Cars go up and down. You know, you'll see the initial results from Star City, their first tournament. And then when we finally get to the Pro Tour, cars release on Moto. You'll see some cars jumping in price on Moto, depending on how much play they may or may not be seen in the Pro Tour. And then when the Pro Tour comes, you see cars just skyrocket, like Dig Through Time became a $20 card as a rare. This happens every Pro Tour. It's to be expected for every Pro Tour. Now, how can you, as a budding financier and wanting to make your collection cheaper, how can you avoid being caught in the Pro Tour hype, or how can you profit from the Pro Tour hype? You guys got any tips?
I don't think you're going to be able to make money buying Reactiville anymore, at least, you know, not reliably. We have a lot of orders getting canceled during Pro Tour Theros, and that didn't happen as much this time just because I think dealers were a little more happy to sell out of some of the stuff that spiked this time around.
What does proactively and reactively mean?
Okay, so if you were watching coverage and it's, you know, Friday evening or Saturday morning, and you're like, okay, Pearl Lake Ancient's still like a buck everywhere. I can buy those. They're getting play on camera. That's reactive. Those Pearl Lake Ancients may stay at $4 or $5. They may be back down to $2, and then after fees, you lost money buying in at $1. Your orders might get canceled. You might not get them in time to benefit from the spike. Buying reactively just isn't really getting there anymore because markets are too efficient. People aren't waiting till Monday to even start thinking about, you know, price adjustment the way they used to. You're going to have to buy proactively. You're going to have to buy those Pearl Lake Ancients at like 75 cents. The week before, you know, you're going to have some faith in your specs. You're going to have to trade for them, you know, at the shops and stuff like that. And then when the Pro Tour happens, you're the guy that's listing them for sale on TCG Player. And you're the one that all the people buying reactively buy from. That's how you make the money. I think you have to be a little bit more proactive, and you have to be ahead of the spikes. So you're going to have to guess correctly, unfortunately. But you can make informed guesses, and that's better. You know, there is an art to finance as much as there is a science. So I think if you are buying into the hype, you probably don't want to do that Saturday of the Pro Tour. You're probably like, oh, I better buy these before they go up again. Because if you buy them cheaply enough, there's a good chance that order is getting canceled. And if you buy at, you know, the spike price, there's a good chance that it'll go below and you could have paid less by waiting. So I think the people that bought their Rikshasa Death Dealers at like close to bulk probably made out, and the people that paid, you know, $4 or $5 for them are probably going to wish they hadn't. So you're going to have to guess correctly, or, you know, intuit correctly, I guess, and buy proactively. But buying reactively is a trap that a lot of budding financiers fall into, and it rarely works out the way you want it to.
Ryan, do you got anything to add about the Pro Tour?
No. That's pretty much perfect. Like, there's not much more you can say about it. Just, you know, if you're watching coverage, don't snap buy things. That's the biggest thing. Wait a week. Please wait a week. I've heard so many people tell me like, oh yeah, I went out and bought my copy because I saw it was on, you know, a list. And by that point, it's almost guaranteed that TCG has already moved on it. Unless you're actually just watching coverage and and jump on TCG at that moment. And those are the times when your orders are just going to get canceled half the time anyway. And, you know, you may be going into good intentions just to buy your own playset, but a lot of times people will still just move the price up and cancel on you. So you're better off just waiting for that spike to happen, see what the realistic new price is going to be, and then move in then.
So there are two kinds of cards that spike as a result of the Pro Tour, right? You have your, you know, See the Unwritten spiking because it was in a Pro Tour deck, and then you have your Hero of Iroas spiking because it was in a Pro Tour deck. So what's the difference? Well, we have as many Hero of Iroises out in the market as there are probably going to be, right? Because no one's really buying that set anymore and opening those cards. Then you have stuff from the brand new just came out set, and we are at the lowest point of card availability possible. The fewest copies we're ever going to have unopened from booster packs are at that point. You don't want to buy at the lowest point of card availability. You want to buy at peak availability, like when, you know, more people have had weeks to draft and people are starting to do Moto Redemption. So, like, some people bought, was it Dig Through Time? They bought that at like 10, 12, 20, 15, 20 bucks, and it's already back down a little bit. Just because people have, those copies have come out of the woodwork and people have had a chance to open them. So I would say if you don't buy proactively enough, I wouldn't buy on the eve of the Pro Tour just because there's a good chance that when people open more of it, the price will go down and give yourself a chance to open them up in a booster draft. You know, if you get a $3 booster pack and you open up that $20 card and don't have to buy a playset online, you just made yourself some money. So give yourself a chance to get the copies and give other people a chance to open the boosters and let the price come down a little bit. And if the price starts to head up or stays the same, okay, maybe you do want to buy in. But for the most part, you can wait a week or two and see what the price does. And you, it's chances are that Dig Through Time was not going to double to $40, you know, because you waited. Like, oh, I wish I'd paid $20 for a rare in the post-mythic era. You know, it's not going to go to $40 a copy, and you'd be like, oh, why didn't I pay $20? The hubris. It's most likely going to go back down or stay at the same. So either way, you're better off waiting.
Another thing that most people don't pay attention to when you're paper financiers is the modal market, either one or the other. But the modal market now, especially that the way that it's been structured with the Pro Tours being a week after the release on Magic Online, you start to see, because the price, because the supply is so thin on Magic Online, you start to see cards and the spikes on these cards. You'll see Dig Through Time on Magic Online was like a $7 card up to the Pro Tour, which was one of the higher prices, one of the higher priced rares. So you can tell that there was definitely some use of Dig Through Time that was going to be tested, because a lot of people are that not necessarily has teams that are playtesting for the Pro Tour will pick up these cards, grind matches on Modo, and so they need these cards and there's a demand for these cards. Wingmaker Rock was another one that started to see, you know, steady climb going up to it towards the Pro Tour. So you can use this as an indicator, and you can see that these are some cards that paper prices may not reflect yet. And so you can use this as a way to, as a precursor to see what cards you may want to pick up before the weekend.
And I would say order, if you're ordering proactively, like Wednesday, Thursday is probably the cutoff. You know, if something spikes and people are inclined to cancel your order or just not send the cards out, if you ordered Thursday, there's a better chance of that happening. I won't order anything after Wednesday if I'm buying it in anticipation of it going up at the Pro Tour. So you need to find some alternate information sources. You need to find out, oh, this has been good in testing. This is spiking a Moto. You know, I did a little bit of playtesting myself, and that confirms my earlier suspicions. Death Dealer's good. Savage Knuckleblade's just as good as I thought. See the Unwritten is standard playable. Anything that confirms your suspicions. You probably don't want to order later than Wednesday because you might not get the cards. So if you're going to be proactive, you're going to have to be very proactive.
All right. Anything else to add?
No, it's time to move on.
All right. Pro Tour?
Awkward segue.
Segway.
Which is shout-outs, Ryan?
Shout-outs? Oh!
Marcel, you're not allowed to do that.
No, I do have some.
That was the number one most
shout-out.
Requested thing. It passed don't do any more deck brewing as our number one requested don't do that anymore thing.
All right. Well, so, shout out to Nathan Weber, because I forgot to mention him. He shout out some good cards to the Cube. Shout out to the Cube Vault guys, because I got my Cube Vault, and that shit is awesome. Picks will be online.
You know what, Marcel? People like shout outs at the end so they can turn off the podcast when they heard people start.
Cool. Well, then let me give a shout out to Revised Angel Heather Don, because she's a big fan, and she's going to get the groundwork ready for this GP Vegas. There you go. You got all my shout outs out in the beginning, so you don't have to worry about it anymore. What about you, Ryan? I know you got some.
Shout out to my buddy Jared Warr for winning Colorado State's He's a local player back in Michigan here a couple of years ago. He's done pretty well at a couple of tournaments, but won SCG States this past weekend from what I understand. So shout out there. Shout out to the, I believe it's all MTG guys, right? Marcel, he said you had lunch with him a couple of days before I met up with him. Actually.
All the MTG, yeah. He was out here in San Francisco for the Oracle, and I got to meet up with him. And was Pork Topping, I believe?
He was working at a show here in Grand Rapids. And he was like, yeah, I just had lunch with Marcel earlier this week. And I was like, that's really weird. All right. So, yeah, I'm glad we confirmed that. So lunch was had. But, yeah, let's see. I'll come up with other shout-outs. Like, you put me on the spot here. I had a couple, too.
Well, you got the whole episode to think because you got nothing else you're going to talk about. So, yeah.
Doesn't matter what we talk about for the rest of the episode because everyone's already turned the podcast off.
Exactly. Now we got our true fans. That's all that matters.
Excellent.
So, Jason, what do you want to talk about? Segue into something. I don't know. I'm not driving this train.
That's your one job, Marcel.
Oh, my God.
Just occasionally chime in about Moto, and you got to keep us on track. Otherwise, Ryan won't say anything for, like, 3-minute awkward pauses you got to cut out, and Corbin will just...
Well, like, I don't know what more to add. That's the thing is, like, we have Corbin for filling the stupid space.
Well, here we go.
Corbin says what I said, but says it in different words.
Yeah, it's like the translator. You have to like wait for it to be translated. That's what Corbin's doing, and like now we just have an awkward pause instead. We can sit here and make fun of Corbin for an hour. That'd probably make a good podcast.
Yeah, I guess.
I don't think Corbin would like that though. He's already not happy with us.
He'll never know.
Well, speaking of Moto,
yeah, he probably won't ever know. He doesn't actually listen to our podcast.
Oh, Ryan just stepped on a segue. This is the best. Speaking of Moto, you were saying, Marcel?
Yeah, speaking of Moto, I got something I'll talk about. This is my Moto strategy. I've you know, so because again with the Pro Tour hype and you know I try to get a play set of whatever is in standard. I try to get it early because usually you could get it for a good price when it goes to the lowest, and by the time it rotates out, you could pretty much sell the key cards to pay for whatever you bought your playset for, and you could pretty much keep your collection going for free. And I have made mistakes in the past. It used to be with Moto, like, you know, the pre-release, like the first week after the release of the cards, like a lot of the cards would be the cheapest there. And slowly, I mean, with the big sets, yeah, you could probably get it later on, but it would slowly start to go up, and you wanted to get in early. But now that the Pro Tour hype is going, and now that the Magic sets are being released a week before the Pro Tour, and you have this Pro Tour pressure upon pre-release prices, that you start to see the spikes higher and cards coming out higher out the gate, and the first couple weeks are still. You know, they're still pretty high because the card pool hasn't been drafted enough. And I think, like, you know, again, like with paper sets, December is a great time to buy. But if you were to buy late October, November, I think that's the cheapest, you know, that's cheaper for you to be able to get into your standard collection for the lowest price. You let the high train die down. And sure, there may be some key cards that you may not be able to anticipate and you weren't able to buy them before the hype came and they became, you know, $10 cards. But over time, like your spread on all the cards, you're going to be much lower. So it's better just to wait a little bit. Sure, you may not be able to play the top decks and you might have to buy some cards for a deck that you want to play. But if you were just to be patient for standard and wait a few months, like you get it in standard the cheapest and then have the opportunity to get the most out of your cards. So that's what I'm doing right now. I have the benefit of being really busy with work, so I'm going to wait and play a bunch of limited in the meantime until like the end of November. Then my strategy is to buy in and try to get in as cheap as possible. So if anybody, you know, is looking to get into standard on Moto, just that's my formula. Subscribe, buy it, and you'll be able to play for cheap.
I don't know. The problem is like, so with me writing this new series, I'm having an issue with Moto actually. I want to start playing Moto immediately, but I'm just not willing to pay those prices. So unlike you, like, I guess I've been kind of busy this time around, but I know that coming up, like, it's not going to be as busy for most Pro Tours, especially the ones in the winter. So I'm going to want to play immediately. And I guess, like, where is the break even where you just, like, have to decide, you know, what it's worth me paying these pre-release prices, these pre-sale prices, because I'm going to be playing enough to expect to make that back? Like, have you really ever looked into that, or do you know anyone who I guess, potentially talk to you about that?
Not really, because I just haven't played them in enough events to make it so that you're breaking even based on the cars. I mean, I would say, like, if you wanted to get an Avs in, like, you needed to see, you should have had most of your cards from the previous sets. You have a lot of Coursers, the Caryatids, and the other cards, Heroes Downfall. So you should have most of those cards already there, and you just need to slot in a few key cards like the Siege Rhinos and maybe a Soren. So sure, you may pay a premium on those, and you might want to get them early so you can start grinding out events. But I think you should just focus in on one deck. And one deck you really want to go to. If you're really trying to brew around, you're going to pay top dollar for that.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. And I think Absin, actually, it's funny that you mentioned that. I think that's where I'm going to end up. So I'm kind of looking at, like, obviously I'm still in that awkward point where, like, there's still Pro Tour pricing kind of affecting some of these cards. Like, I expect to see Drino drop a little more than what it is, like the current five tickets. Maybe not though. I mean, it's a good rare. It's just like, it's only in one, two decks. So I don't think it can hold, but maybe I'm wrong. I guess at this point, like, I might as well just buy them, because even if they drop, they're not going to be much. But when it first comes out, I can devote myself to one deck, but the biggest problem is really identifying whether or not that's a deck that has a lot of cards that rotate it in, and then if that's a deck that, you know, goes with my playstyle. Because, like, you never want to shoehorn yourself into playing a deck you're not comfortable with the archetype. Because, like, for me, I just don't feel right about putting a Goblin Guide sideways. Like, that's just not my play style. I can't do it. It doesn't matter how good that style of deck is. Unless it's next to a Delver, I'm just not interested. And I know that, which really is unfortunate for some, because a lot of times when your format first comes out, those are the really cheap decks you can build. Or those, you know, mono red burn, stuff like that. The closest that I've actually seen is this Jeskai deck, where you're, like, you're still relying on burn to usually finish the game out, but you have, like, a mid-range tempo. You have some answers for what your opponent's doing. You're not just like, hey, I have to aim every spell I play at your face. And so I could get with that, but I guess that's my real big issue, I guess, is, like, devoting myself to that deck and figuring out what that best deck is going to be immediately.
Well, I mean, you could wait till after the Pro Tour. Like, this week right now, all the Pro Tour hype cards have started to drop down. Sure, Dig Through Time is still $7, but, you know, like, Siege Rhino,
not 20 anymore.
Yeah, well, Amoto went up to, it was like $12 that it hit, and it came back down. Siege Rhino went up to 10, and now it's below 5. You could get Mantis Rider for below 3, which, if you wanted to put that deck together, it's not that bad. Sure, you got to deal with a
Stoke the Flames is more than Mantis Rider at this point on Moto.
Yes, 515, which is
Oh, is there 515?
Yes.
Oh, man, I need to do some selling. I had 37 copies when I saw the other day.
Really?
Oh, I drafted M15 a lot.
Hey, that's a good reason to start drafting M15.
Logging on to Moto now.
But yeah, like, so, like, now, actually, after the Pro Tour hype train has went away, you could probably find, okay, these are the decks that is being played in the Pro Tour. You know, you could be like, okay, this is probably the standard meta, at least for the immediate month or two, and just pick one of those decks that fits your play style and just go in. You may pay, you're not going to get the optimal price on it, sure, if you waited a couple months, but then you'll be playing the deck for more months, which I think is worth it. You know, it really depends on your time. I think waiting too long to play the cards is bad.
Oh, I agree. I just guess I don't know where that, like, break off is. So it's really like the week after the Pro Tour, you think, is about the good time to get in?
Yeah, if you want to get in on a deck from the Pro Tour, wait a week for the hype to go down. Like, all the prices have crashed, and just go in, I think.
Fair. Yeah, that's probably where I want to be, I think, because, I mean, I don't play enough to have to be playing that first week, but there are definitely times when I have enough time I'd like to be. So I guess I just have to really decide, you know, if I can play 3 daily events a day or 2 daily events a day, then it's worth it. But if I can't do that, then I shouldn't be buying them, probably.
Yeah, you should just put your money into limited. Just start grinding limited. Because I honestly think, like, at the start of a format, you should just be playing limited just because, I mean, it's when it's fresh. It's when, you know, you have a good chance, if you know how to play limited good, that you can spike events and, you know, build your collection by playing, just keep grinding events and selling the rares and rare drafting. And you get the most money for your rares. So, like, you know, I was pulling, fetch lands and selling them for like $10 during the first few days of the pre-release on Moto. And you could just, like, cycle through events pretty well. And, I think that's just, you know, the way to go, at least for the first start. And then from there, you know, the Pro Tour happens. You can have X amount of limited events under your belt. And if you do decent at them, it's not going to cost you a whole lot of money to just cycle events, and then you can figure out what your deck is and then jump into standard that way. And I think that's just the better flow, I guess.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, this time around, like, I really kind of emphasized to myself on trying to get to at least 2 to 3 of any of the mythics I wanted to play, and then 4x of all the rares. And that's worked pretty well for me. So, like, I feel like, unfortunately, I didn't have Rabble Masters. That was one card I managed to skip over. So that kind of crosses a lot of decks off my list right now. But I do have, like, 4 of all my temples and stuff like that. So I'm pretty well prepared to be able to get into any deck. I just don't – I don't know. I still haven't seen the deck that's just like, this is me. The Abs in mid-range is the closest thing, but I want that deck to be more control, but I still want to play Siege Rhino. So
play control with the Siege Rhino. Shit.
Like, I just want more Elsbeths and Siege Rhinos, but I also want to put them next to Chromanticores, so that's my current issue.
Do it. Yeah, I like Abzan. I'm sad that it won the Pro Tour because now everyone loves Abzan.
But I mean, it was already slated to be one of the top tier one decks. Like, it winning the Pro Tour, I don't think really hinged on whether or not that deck was good. Like, I think everyone already went in knowing, like, hey, this is a real threat. Like, it's shown up for what, the past 3 weeks now in events and real, like, SCGs and stuff.
I mean, there was always going to be an Abzan mid-range deck.
Yeah, I mean, the pieces were all there. Like, you have Thoughtseize next to a bunch of powerful creatures that are right on curve. And you're putting them in just the right color combinations. Like, Abzan has always been a good control color combination whenever you're lacking the counter spell control decks. And that's what you're lacking right now in standard, so.
I wish Corbin was here to eat crow. Because he was like, yeah, there's not going to be any three color. An Abzan deck, a Jeskai deck. Do you think that every guild is going to have a deck? Well, it looks like.
No, I think.
Mardu has a Planeswalker deck, too.
Yeah, I think you thought every single, I don't know.
No, when I said that there was going to be an Outlast deck, you guys completely ripped me off for the rest of the episode.
Yeah, and then there was no Outlast deck.
No, there is not an Outlast deck. But,
so,
but
which that is exactly what you said, so.
No, but that was the deck I was wrong on, but pretty much all the other stuff was close to decently on point.
I know I've talked about this already, but I really wish the Jeskai Ascendancy deck was playable on Modo. Nothing makes me more sad than looking at a completed standard deck that I have no interest in playing.
Modo.
Like, it's terrible. Like, why? Ugh. As a combo player, I really want to petition Wizards to find a way to make it easier for me to combo. But I guess they also don't want people to play those decks, so they're not fun for other people to play against.
Yeah, it is if you don't have to go through all the triggers and it just happens.
Yeah, you don't have to play a whole game of Magic. Like, that's so cool. Like, oh, I don't have to play a two-sided game. I just get to watch you masturbate over there. That's a lot easier. Thanks, opponent.
I mean, when you put it like that. All right, fine. I won't complain anymore about that deck. Still, it makes me sad. Like, we were just talking about before the cast. I'm going to go play freaking Spanish Inquisition at a Legacy Grand Prix. Like, of course that's my favorite play to play Magic.
Well, I mean, they got Modern for you. You can play as many combo decks as you want in there.
Modern sucks. No, because the moment I get into a combo deck, I'm not even looking. No, I'm not looking at either of the two combo decks I want to play right now because they're both going to be freaking banned. Narset's getting banned in Modern, and so is Jeskai Ascendancy.
Narset's getting banned?
Narset is stupid in Modern. So you Goryeo's Vengeance out Narset with a bunch of things like Aggravated Assault and all these things that give you extra draw steps. And then apparently the guy who's been playing it, like, the deck can win on turn one first off.
No one has even seen a list and Ryan's already calling for its inevitable banning.
Like, because there hasn't been any Modern events yet. But this deck is like, same thing with Jeskai Ascendancy. Like, there are two like, consistent
Ryan, I would
turn
be willing to
Fogo decks.
Bet that Narset does not get banned in Modern.
It probably won't get banned, but they're going to ban one of the other pieces of that combo. They'll probably just ban Goryeo's Vengeance. That card's been on the chopping block for a while, I think.
So we really? We can say then Narset, if it's not Narset, then it's one of the other cards, and then the deck is going
to
be banned,
I'd
and
be
that's
willing,
Fogo
I'd
worthy.
Be willing to bet that that deck does not cause a card to be banned. In Modern.
They don't want turn three combos though. Like that's the thing. It's gonna get banned just because they have that rule. It doesn't even matter if the deck is like actually great. If they're holding to their rule, something's getting banned. Both Jeskai Ascendancy's probably getting banned. Like it's a turn three consistent combo.
I can see Jeskai Ascendancy. I can't see Narset.
Yeah, I can't see anything from the Narset deck, whether it's Goryeo's Vengeance or Relentless Assault or any of those
what
cards.
What other turn three decks have they let survive?
How about Infect? Infect is just as consistent as this Narset deck, and it wins on turn two.
The Narset deck can win on turn one.
Oh yeah, well, the Infect deck can win on turn zero, as long as we're being hyperbolic and one-upping each other. Like,
no, it's no, like, the deck actually has consistent turn one wins. Like, it's not.
Then why'd you say
it's not like
a
5%? It's a turn three deck because that's when you have, that's, like, you are going to win on turn three. That is what that means. It's just like the Jeskai Ascendancy deck. Like, that deck can win on turn two. However, it's usually a turn three deck.
I mean, there was Grizzlebrand and Emrakul before there was Narset.
Correct, but those didn't let you win that turn. That's why, and they also would, those could die. Like, you have removal that can kill them. Narset has hexproof.
Hey.
That's a problem.
Narset does really have hexproof.
It doesn't sound like a problem, but you start thinking about it when you're swinging with this card and you get, like, it plays like, I don't know the list. I haven't actually seen it, but I'm listening to enough people talk about this deck to understand that, like, it's a problem. Like, you have Aggravated Assault, Time Warp, all these things. Like, you just take three turns the first time you attack, and then your opponent never gets a turn.
Sounds like a Fuggo bit.
All right, it's not Time Warp, sorry. It's Aggravated Assault and whatever the other Relentless Assault, I don't know, whatever
one's
available.
There's Fury of the Horde.
Sure, there's that,
too. Fury of the Horde was already getting played.
Right. So, whatever the deck is, like, Narset just made, I think it just took that deck over the top, probably, because, like, I've already liked that deck. I really want to build it on Modo, but I'm just not going to do it unless I see that they're not going to ban it. And like I said, I'm not willing to take that bet because I don't know 100%, but I've heard too many people that I respect talking about this deck as it's a real thing and that it is a problem. And I believe
guys,
it. Like,
be prepared to play against this deck. I don't know if it's necessarily bannable, but it's something to look out for.
Yeah. I mean, is there answers to Narset and Modern, like, as far as instant speed, like, kill a hexproof creature? There's got to be, right?
I mean, their edicts effects are a thing.
Yeah, I guess you have, like, Devour Flesh. There you go. Pick up your Devour Fleshes now. It isn't uncommon, right?
Well, I think the ban will probably take care of Narset.
That's fine. Because, see, like, I don't really lose in this situation because I've already, like, backed off and said, like, maybe it's not going to get banned, and I'm definitely not willing to bet on it. However, if it does get banned, you just, like,
no, that was what I was trying to establish. I was just trying to make you backpedal.
Oh, that's fine. like I said, I have not. Most of the stuff you say is ridiculous. When I get some games on this deck, I may be more willing to make that bet. But until I've, like, actually picked this deck up and played it, and I just heard a bunch of people talking about it, I'm still not willing to commit to it. However, it does definitely scare me as a, like, turn two, turn three, really consistent potential turn one deck. There was a Channel Fireball article on it, actually. I think. Yeah, here, I'll go look. But anything else in exciting about Modern that you guys want to talk about since we're on the subject?
No.
Hey, no. I went to FNM for the first time ever.
Whoa, the first time ever. Tell us about that and its financial implications. Just kidding, there aren't any. Go ahead.
There isn't. It was interesting. I mean, I like it, I guess. You get to draft and you get to play with people and hang out and play cube in between rounds. TSG's cube or my cube, whatever one. But it was an enjoyable experience. I like picking cards for the cube, so that makes for drafting extra fun. But I think I like the community aspect of it and meeting other people, and that's something that Modo completely lacks. And now that I see the other side of it, because I really just I don't know why I've never gone to an FNM. I just thought it was like, I don't know. It never occurred in the Bay Area. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know why. And so, like, I think that I will be attending more of these, and the opportunity to draft in real life compared to doing it on Modo is such a much better experience. So, I mean, I would like to consume Magic in paper form better over Magic Online, but the convenience of Magic Online severely outweighs that in the long term for me.
Fair. Alright, so I have less respect for this deck after I went and looked at that article again. however, the list that he has here is quite a ways off from the list I'm hearing about people talking about. So, like, I don't know an exact list yet of what people are running, but it definitely is definitely a scary deck. I'm not super stoked about playing against it for sure.
Well, so, shit, like, a bunch of these cards are gonna spike just because it's a stupid Woobrew. Like,
probably.
I bet all those million copies of Fury of the Horde that I sat on for 2 years that went nowhere are probably going to be like $8 by the end of the week.
Gemstone Caverns. I've always been waiting for that card to go up.
Ugh.
No? You don't like it?
No, the card is just sweet. Ugh, that stupid Travis Woobrew is going to make a bunch of shitty cards spike.
Oh, it's not already, like people it's are already gonna... spiked, so.
Yeah, so.
Gemstone Caverns is up like 50 cents.
Jesus.
I'm so happy.
Like, so if there are no Furies of the Horde on TCG Player, it's because I bought them all on Wednesday night when we recorded this cast.
You should start EDH Brews, Jason, then you can spike the market.
Yep. Making cards spike one copy in a deck at a time.
Oh, your Fury of the Horde really got blown out.
What do you mean?
It was reprinted in Speed vs. Cunning.
Ouch.
Yeah, I sold way before that.
Oh, I thought you said you still had them.
No, I got sick of sinning on them.
That's good. Yeah. I mean, regular copies are like $2.50 right now on TCG, but you can get the dual deck ones for 80 cents.
I feel like they haven't made a financially relevant dual deck in quite a while. Like, I feel like it's been a while since
last year. Was fine. Jays vs. Vraska was fine.
Yeah. Like,
That one was really fun. Jace
vs. Vraska was fine right out of the gate, too, when you were looking at that remand.
Then you have, like, a Jace and a Vraska, both of which were sought after at different points, so.
The art on him was kind of sucky, though.
Yeah.
No, sure, but I mean, yes, it brought the Jace price down a lot more than it would have had it just been able to rotate on its own, but, like, that was, you know, we forget that was a $20 card when that deck was announced. So.
That's true. That is true.
So it definitely had financial implications. Maybe not positive ones, but it definitely had some financial implications.
So what about the implications of Liliana being reprinted? Now we had the announcement at the Pro Tour, the pre-TQs, when you go to the regional, the PTQs now, they're going to have a promo card, and Liliana of the Veil is the promo card for the regional PTQs. If you attend it, all you got to do is attend, and everyone that attends gets a copy of this card. And it's estimated between 3,000 to 5,000 copies will enter the market. What do you think this is going to do for Liliana?
What a great way to reprint a card. My hat's off to Wizards for figuring out yet another way to reprint a card, but not just, like, completely smash its price. This is going to go to an audience of people who want the card to play with. So these aren't immediately going to get sold. I'm sure a lot of people have their copy, but, like, you know, this is a... I don't know. I think it's a very clever way to reprint a card and not just have it as a judge foil. So I don't think it'll have a gigantic effect on price, but I think that the fact that copies are coming in are going to affect the market. So I think if you sold right at the time of the announcement with the purpose of buying in later, you could probably make some money doing that, but at this point, I wouldn't bother with it because I think the opportunity is probably past to do something like that at this point.
Cool. I'm glad they're putting it. Liliana was going to be in cons. Or wait, was it M15? I think it was M15.
Probably M15.
And then they decided, oh, no, Mono Black Devotion is too powerful.
Yeah, I can definitely see that being a problem. If nothing else, it would have made those last 3 months even more miserable to play for Standard.
Not possible.
I wouldn't have mind because I wasn't playing anyways. And out of
I wasn't either. I don't think anybody was.
it was just – it felt real lame ducky. Everyone's like, yeah, let's wait till there's Magic's worth playing again.
There was like one guy that came over to buy a bunch of cards for me because he was so excited to build this deck. He was like, yeah, I'm going to go play an FNM. And he was sitting there telling me about his deck. And, like, half of it was getting ready to rotate. And I'm just like, all right. And he's like, well, what do you think? And I'm just like, honestly, I don't have any opinion at all. Like, I don't know what a metagame looks like. Your deck doesn't sound real. I don't know. Yes, maybe. But, like, there's so few people. And most of the time, the people I find that do care about those formats are the people who are just playing FNM every week. And it's certainly not the competitive crowd, which means you're not getting these new, unique, you know, awesome.
So they're not
decks.
The FNM grinders, Ryan?
No, they are the FNM grinders. Like, that's the people who play FNM. They're grinding.
Hey, I'm an FNM grinder now.
To one FNM.
Two, actually. I went to two back-to-back because we missed a week.
Oh, man.
And I got two fetch lands out of it. I had to buy one off of TSG and got the other one. And I got a Dig Through Time. And I got a Treasure Cruise for the cube. and I got 4 of the 5 Tri-Lands.
Holy shit, Marcel.
Hey.
Treasure Cruise.
Treasure Cruise is top shit. I like that card.
I do too. It's just, it's
the worst episode we've ever recorded.
I know. I don't give a fuck.
It really sucks because I was hoping this is going to be our episode to like, hey, we're doing our own thing. Suck it. We really do need to record like a 4-person episode for that though.
Or just a good one.
Yeah. I mean, this works. It's fine. We're almost done, aren't we?
This is serviceable at best.
Like, we're at like 50 minutes. It's hard. Seriously, Corbin is our stupid filler.
I never realized how much dead space he fills.
He really is. Like
repeating whatever somebody else said.
Yeah, I think we're just like off as well. Like, it's well, just,
I don't talk enough, and Marcel, you don't talk enough. So it's like usually Jason and Corbin, and they're like, we throw things in here and there. So without Corbin, it's just like Jason, and Jason's
I'll
like, talk.
And then when I stop, it's like crickets.
Yeah. And I don't know. I'm kind of off too. I didn't pay much attention to Magic, so I have nothing to say at all.
I mean, I'm in a similar boat just because I've had a busy couple of weeks, but
let's not take a week off and then come back with a shitty one.
I know.
We have to.
There's no other option. We're not going to,
we're not putting one out.
Oh, I know. We got to.
And Corbin's clearly not going to be making himself available this week, so.
Let's try.
How about we just add this all in and make it part of the episode? There we go.
Sure. Deal. I don't care. Let the people hear our eternal struggle. Like, this is why Corbin's on the cast. When people ask why we haven't gotten rid of Corbin, this is it. Here you go. You people who are listening and you keep supporting getting rid of Corbin, as much as we joke about it, we can't. It's like the, you know, the, there's some good analogy there that I'm just too tired to think of.
You know, Corbin could think of an analogy.
I'm sure he could. I'm sure he could think of a number of things I don't care about hearing him listen or hear him talk about, but it fills that space.
Yeah, yeah. It's sad. It's sad that we need Corbin.
The best part is we're going to say all this stuff. This is like the nicest and worst things we've ever said about Corbin, all rolled into a package, and he'll never hear it. Because like I said, he doesn't listen to the podcast.
But you know, all the listeners will tell him about it. Do you know what they said about you, Corbin?
I hope they do. Maybe he'll listen to an episode of the podcast.
He still won't.
That's a good strategy.
I'm not even worried. It's an idle threat. What's the worst thing that happens? Corbin actually listens to an episode.
How about this? Corbin, if you actually listen to this right now, I'll buy you a gallon of ice cream.
And the keyword is cricket. You have to say cricket.
On the next episode.
What is he, the Manchurian candidate?
I'll even have a helicopter. I'll have an Amazon drone fly to your house, Corbin. It'll come in from the sky. Ice cream. From the sky.
Sky scream, they'll call it.
Oh, my goodness. He's like a transformer.
I scream, you scream, we all scream for Sky Scream because it's delivered by a drone. And if I saw a drone dropping shit in my neighborhood, I'd probably
scream. I don't want a drone anywhere near my house. Don't do that to me, Marcel. I don't care what it's delivering.
Yeah, I don't think it would survive actually in Oklahoma. They'd shoot it down. What is that there in the sky?
No, they'd probably salute it.
God bless America keeping us safe.
Yeah, I miss, there's someone that works in the building. He's like, oh yeah, I'm from Oklahoma. I was like, oh man, Oklahoma. I know someone from out there. I was like, what do you miss about Oklahoma? He's like, absolutely nothing actually. I was like, even your family's like, yeah, I like my family, but yeah, Oklahoma sucks.
Great.
I miss casual racism.
Yeah, I don't know. Corbin really, he really loves that place.
He's staying.
Maybe. We really just need to, like, get him to push and get a job for Wizards and then get out of there.
That could happen, actually. I could see Corbin in Seattle.
Really? You could see Corbin in Seattle?
I could see Corbin at Wizards before I see Corbin in Seattle.
I was going to say, if you met people from Seattle, then, like, imagine introducing someone from Seattle to Corbin in Seattle. Like, that's not going to go well.
I don't think there's a Buffalo Wild Wings in Seattle either.
I'm sure there's a Buffalo Wild Wings.
I imagine there's at least
Seattle.
One Buffalo Wild Wings.
I was being facetious. God damn it.
He might, though. It would not surprise me if he chooses housing location based on where the Buffalo Wild Wings are. Like, I feel like that's probably a necessity for Corbin moving anywhere else at this point.
I'm sure. He'd be like, you know, this is outside the delivering range. I cannot stay here. they're going to charge me $1 to deliver if I live outside this, you know, a block away from this house. Oh man, is this really what we've come to? Like, this is the best part of our cast this week, is that we're sitting here insulting a person that cannot defend himself.
That's he couldn't defend favorite. Himself if he were here.
Yeah, that's my favorite part.
You guys got anything else for the listeners that we could give them something to walk away with?
How about a pick of the week? Cause...
Yeah, let's do pick of the week.
It's time for the pick of the week.
Yeah, I pick Perilous Vault because I still don't know why that card hasn't jumped yet. It's seeing enough play.
It has. Like, it has
more
control.
No, it's like $4. It's been like $4. Like, the card has not really jumped at all.
I got the MTG price email that says stock is lowering. So even if the price hasn't jumped yet, as of Wednesday, the stock is being depleted enough that, I gotta imagine that the price is going to respond soon. So if by Friday the price still hasn't really reacted yet, I think it's pretty safe to,
Yeah, some places are adjusting, but other places are still, you can get them like $5, $6 on eBay for some of them. Like, it's definitely a lot harder than it was, but, you're right. The amount of them is drying up, and I guess people are finally getting on that train. It really surprised me it didn't happen over the weekend when people started seeing it. You know, it's a four of in that one list, and the Esper or Black, the Black Blue list, I think, one of the two. I think it's just the Dimir deck. Yeah, just the Black Blue. Kunio, he was running a four of. And, you know, it's right next to Pearl-like Ancient, so, like, I understand the hesitation, you know, since that card jumped and ours already dropped. But Perilous Vault is a lot more versatile, too. Like, it's definitely going to see more than just play in this deck. You know, as we start seeing these three- and four-color decks that can't necessarily afford to end hostilities, like, this becomes a much more realistic, ability to clear your board.
And we did talk about how a card like Perilous Vault's in a different classification for something like Pearl-like Ancient. Like, people are going to open more Pearl-like Ancients. Do you think people are going to open more Perilous Vaults next week?
Exactly, yeah. And I'm actually talking about that in my article right now, is that Perilous Vault, you know, being in the core set is, you know, clearly any cards in core sets usually have a little bit higher ceiling just because of that.
Yeah, look at Nissa and, you know, Rabblemaster. So, yep. All
right, so my pick of the week is going to be a dual pick for Moto. We hear the grunging. But these cards could even drop some more. But I just feel they're absurdly cheap. This Rattleclaw Mystic and Savage Knuckleblade, which is $1.16 and 69 cents respectively. I guess these didn't do that great at the Pro Tour, but these cards are just very powerful. And being under $1 for Knuckleblade and Rattleclaw for around $1, like, I guess these cards just need a home. And once they do, they'll be $3 to $5 cards. I mean, on paper. I mean, Rattleclaw is $5, Knuckleblade is $3.50, so I think there's less upside there. But I just can't see these cards being that weak, I mean, and being that depressed. I guess it's going to be like the Fleetsmane Lion Syndrome and just never finds a home and never does anything and never becomes a dollar card. But I hope not. So, I mean, it may not be the best pick of the week, but I think that is absurdly cheap for those cards, which are way too powerful. How about you, Jason?
You know, I'm kind of liking Fleeceman Lion under $5 right now. I think if you can get Fleeceman Lion under $5, depending on how far under $5 you can get them, I think these could see $5 or $6 or $7. Because, I don't know. I think Death Dealer may be the stronger play, but Death Dealer's going to get opened a lot. You're not going to be opening any more packs of Fleeceman Lion in them. So I think the supply is steady. So I think the demand is going to bring the price up. It's already creeping up a little bit. If you can get them under four, that's probably fine. I like them under three if you can still get them under three. But under four is probably fine. I would trade them out. I would not be looking to buy those to flip them. I'd be looking to buy them to trade them away a place at a time at FNM, you know, for like 6-7 if you paid $3.80 or something like that. I think that's a card where I see the stock percentage go way down, and I think people are making moves on it, so I think people at the store want them. And that's something that they're not going to be able to get drafting. Your store is going to be sold out. Like, no one's going to have play sets of Fleece Mainline. So giving people the opportunity to trade for them, you can get some value hooking them up that way. Saves them going online to buy them. So I would definitely consider Fleece Mainline under $4. And I would just flip them. I wouldn't say hold them for this long. I would out them in trades if you can. That's kind of my strategy.
That sounds good. I like it.
No, you don't. Like you just waited for me to stop talking, and then you paused for 10 seconds, and then said, "Yeah."
Yeah, just trying to.
I'm the host.
How
do you really feel about Fleece Mainline? What's it doing on Moto?
It's a dollar. I bought some copies at 50 cents, and I was hoping it would do more, but people, from what I've heard, like Fleece Mainline occupies a weird position because of the colored Vana, that if you're not dropping it on turn two, it just sharply diminishes in value, and you really need one to hit on curve. And in order for it to hit on curve, you're going to be taking a lot of damage from your lands, so it's less effective. But you've seen that Abzan was doing pretty good in the aggro build of it. You can do a more aggro style, and Fleece Mainline would be a part of that. So
I keep hearing so much about Fleece Mainline, and I'm not really seeing it show up, but like I keep hearing about it, so there's got to be something to it.
I've always liked the card.
Yeah, I don't know. But I like Death Dealer a lot.
But it could be like, you know, Brewmaid Dragon, which is a really good card and just never went nowhere. And there's no
Brewmaid was like, it was played a little bit in Jund, but Jund found better stuff to do. Where Broodmate really got played was like those five color control decks, and like they only wanted it as like a one of. Which is why Wingmate Rock was a card that I got wrong twice and right twice and managed to make no money. So when it was initially like $10, I was like, I think this card's good. I don't know if you want to pay 10, but I think it get played as like a one or two of. But I like it. And then it went down to like 5. I'm like, oh, well, I guess Wingmate Rock sucks. And then it went up to like 15. I was like, shit, I was wrong twice. I could have, if I had seen it go to 5 and been like, oh, this is a great buy-in opportunity, and not, oh, I guess I misevaluated it. So I was wrong about being wrong, and then I made no money on Wingmate Rock. That sucked. I really didn't see it getting played as more than a you know, like a two of in the decks that wanted it, but I think it probably spiked as much due to low supply as it did high demand. You know, when you see a like go dip down to 5 and back up to 10, you know, a lot of that is, oh, well, it was expected to see very little play and then got like some modicum of play. Being a mythic, that helps it. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Ashcloud Phoenix was a mythic that you guys were not very excited about.
How's it doing?
It's a 650 TCG mid.
In paper or on?
In paper. It's wow. $2 in Moto, yeah.
I have not seen that in a single list. I still do not like Ashcloud Phoenix.
It's pretty insane. I mean,
a number of the Jeskai Winds decks are running like a one or two of main deck and another one or two on the board. It's, I don't know, I guess it's probably good versus like the Abzan decks where, you know, they're trying to one for one you. So, like, I imagine that's place right now. I know
it's
that's
like an attrition-y type card.
Yeah, I mean, it gives you a little game because it's kind of weird. Like, the Jeskai decks and the Abzan decks, like, you would expect Jeskai to want to kill its opponents faster. When you're playing against like a deck with Siege Rhinos and stuff, but that doesn't seem to be the strategy. It really like, it boards into like counter spells like Disdainful Stroke and stuff like that. And then you, use this probably to, you know, finish them off, I guess. Like, I don't know. I haven't really like seen that matchup or tested that matchup enough to know exactly why they switch into that, but like that seems to be where the deck, or where that card is seeing play right now. Which
just
is fine.
Ran so many shitty Phoenixes in every set that like every time I see a Phoenix now, like, I just assume it's going to be bad.
It's like when I see a Mythic Hydra, I just assume it's going to be worth money, even if it's not playable.
I think people get Hydra fatigue at this point. They've done that way too much.
But they still keep being worth money.
And they still keep making good ones, too, because I'm like, not another stupid Hydra. And they print Hooded Hydra, and I actually really like Hooded Hydra. I promised myself I wouldn't get excited about another Hydra. And then Hooded Hydra came along and stole my heart. I love you, Hooded Hydra.
Yeah, we love Hooded Hydra.
That's not a euphemism, by the way. That sounds kind of dirty.
You love the Hooded Hydra. So thank you, everyone, to another special episode.
Oh, no. Because I don't even remember what the last thing that we were allowed to broadcast that we said was before we started all that bullshit.
I don't. It doesn't matter. It's getting pieced together. So anyway.
Let's end on something usable.
So anyway, this was a great, lovely episode. We hope for next week that we'll have a little more cohesiveness and we'll get stories of the Pro Tour from Corbin. And we may have, I don't know, some actual mojo.
Cause Moto Mojo?
We ain't got no mojo right now.
What are you talking about?
I don't know.
Corbin needs to come back so he can rein you in a little bit. What's going on?
But anyway. So thank you for listening to another lovely episode.
Oh, you sound bored.
Well, thank you for paying attention to,
even you don't endorse this episode. Now let's go out with a bang. Let's do a bonus pick of the week because Corbin's not here and people are used to getting four.
Sure. All right.
Anybody got a bonus pick of the week?
I got a bonus pick of the week. Pick up your beta lightning bolts because they're just going to go up over time. And this, I believe.
Wait, no, hold on. I got this. If we're doing Corbin's pick of the week. Well, darn it all, Jason, you stole my pick of the week. My pick of the week was going to be that. So instead, I'm going to sit here and ho-hum for 10 minutes, and then I'll come up with a really obvious card and standard that's probably going to strike. There we go. Corbin's pick of the week.
Mana Confluence. You should buy or sell it.
Yes. If you don't have your Sylvan Caryatids now, you haven't been listening to our podcast.
So I kind of wish Corbin had been on tonight to argue with me, because he's not real bullish on Mana Confluence right now because it's down and it's not showing up as much as people thought it might and, you know, all these reasons. And I'm like, man, I just know that with mana this good, there's always going to be a five-color deck. And I don't know what it's going to be. I don't know if it's going to be like Savage Knuckleblade and Mantis Rider and Wingmate Rock and Sidisi all in a deck. I really don't know what the five color deck's going to look like, but I really think that it'll be a thing just because with the mana so good, you just play good cards. And there are a lot of good cards in Magic right now. And you have the mana to cast them. So I feel like when the five color deck just gets figured out, people are going to want Mana Confluence and they're going to feel real silly that they sold them at a, like an artificial, slump. So, I read Corbin's article on Unpeopled, and I didn't necessarily agree with some of the stuff he said about Mana Confluence, so I kind of wanted to talk to him about it. So maybe we'll dust that off next week when he rejoins us, because I got a feeling that whatever happens with Mana Confluence, it won't happen like in the immediate future. But I think that would be a nice debate for us to get into, because you guys agree with me that like a five-color deck is practically inevitable, right?
I hope
yeah,
so.
Absolutely. Like, there's no way the format at some point doesn't come to that. Like, it might not happen with this set. Like, I think it's going to happen with this set, but, like, I could see it not quite getting there. And just because, like, maybe your three-color decks, like Abzan, can pretty much handle almost everything, because you have, like, things like Utter End and Hero's Downfall. So you don't actually have those reasons you have to splash into the other two colors. But Chromanticore is going to see a Tay-Day. Five-color control is a real thing, and that card is becoming a big enough push for me to want to go there, and there are certainly other reasons.
If you could do five colors in Cons Limited, you could do five colors in Standard.
It's true. I mean, the mana base is certainly there for it. Like, you're going to be a slower deck, and you're going to have to pack a lot of removal. But, I mean, that's pretty much what the old five-color control deck did. So, you know, you don't have a Maldrifter, but, you know, we have Read the Bones.
You may have to wait until, you know, the Zendikar fetches get reprinted in the next set. But, you know, it'll happen.
See, I don't think the five-color deck's going to run a lot of fetches. I think the five-color deck's going to be a lot of comes into play tap lands and mana confluences.
Domain.
What's the point of domaining in this, though?
Because
like, you have three-color lands. Like, I don't even think that you're going to play a ton of temples. You're probably just running, like, the, you know, the old shards block, three-color come into play tap, try lands.
Man, I don't know how many coming in to play tap lands you re- oh, man, I don't
you get to run like 12 to 15. Like, you're a slow deck. You're a control deck. You, again, it's just like, do you remember the old five-color deck? Like, it got crushed by the mono-red decks because unless you resolved, like, Kitchen Finks. And
you were playing Plume Veil. because the aggro decks would smash you.
Right. So like those same answers exist within this format. And really this format is much more forgiving to a five color deck because like most decks, even the Jeskai deck, like it doesn't really do anything until turn three. Like it might magma jet you at end of turn or like lightning strike you or it might kill a creature if you play one. But like the deck in and of itself is not like that's the fastest deck you really have out there. Maybe the red white tokens deck, but there's not really like a straight burn deck, which is really good for the, you know, forward movement of a five color deck. Like it certainly makes it plausible.
I think Siege Rhino is likely to be a big component of the deck. You know, it's going to be this set's kitchen finks. And maybe the incremental life gain you get off of Wingmate Rock is probably going to, I mean, Wingmate Rock reminds me of Broodmate Dragon already. And the fact that it can gain you a little bit of life, that's going to be an important player going forward. I'm not saying to buy in now. I just really don't know, but yeah, that's going to be a player in a five color deck. So I guess if you look to what was played in them the last time mana was this good, and you can look for analogous cards, that's some stuff to consider possibly making a move on. That's kind of what I'm going to be doing over the next week or two. So I'll probably of that ilk have a pick of the week next week. There's no immediacy moving on those, so we can take our time and really kind of figure out what the card's going to be. So I bet by next week I'll have figured out what I'm going to do, and I'll let you guys in on it because we love our listeners.
We love our listeners. Yes, indeed. And tune in next week for more Brainstorm Brewery,
where we'll do the shout-outs in the middle.
Oh, shout-out to...
No, you're done. You're cut off. No more shout-outs.
Shout-outs to Corbin for not being here but being the glue that ties this cast together. And it doesn't matter how sappy that was because he'll never hear it.
What was the keyword? It was donuts?
Cricket.
I don't even remember.
Cricket. You better say cricket, Corbin.
He won't.
It's where Fogo.
Are you just secretly betting him Fogo without him even knowing?
Oh, yeah. I just lost a Fogo bet. Oh, we need to show up, you ugly idiot.
We should give him a month.
Yeah, we'll go to Fogo, and then I'll put the, you know,
one of his friends will tell him.
Anyone who hears this cannot tell Corbin. This is the secret we're keeping from Corbin. Don't do it.
Cause he won't listen to the end, but you will, so you don't want to include him in, right?
Right.
Yeah, if you know Corbin well enough that you consider telling him, wouldn't you like something at his expense? Of course you would.
He's already told us about all of his friends. He's like, I seem to be the butt of the joke in every circle I'm in. So, you know, I imagine most of his friends that hear this are going to continue to allow him to be that. Because they're good friends.
Indeed. Let's end this cast while the horse is still breathing.
Is it, though?
Nah, I think it's chewed up into a patty.
Marcel just doesn't want to talk about Fogo bets because he bet that stupid bulk rare bird was going to be like over $1 or something.
It will be. I still have faith in it. That card is very powerful. It's going to be it and hardened scales taking over the format.
And unexpected terrain or whatever Trail of Mysteries.
Yes, Trail of Mysteries. I was just about to say that. Thank you, Ryan.
What's our word for cards like Trail of Mystery? Suspicious tech? Trail of Mysteries, suspicious as fuck tech.
The best limited archetype. That's
why are you giving us a card that does this? Oh, you'll see. I almost want to buy a million of those just for the ridiculous card that is inevitably in the next set.
That will make it just fucking awesome, right? Yeah, it's going
to
happen.
Like, if I play that card, I want to play it right next to Karametra.
Oh, shit, I didn't mute myself in time. I just sneezed right in my goddamn mic.
It's fine. It goes right in line with everything else that's going on.
This is what I think of this podcast. It's you. I don't even cover my mouth.
Think about it. It's perfect. It pairs with the Karametra. It gets you another basic land. And it's one more devotion towards Karametra. Like broken. Boom. Done. Format's figured out.
You play it with Villainous Wealth or Nemesis Wave.
Stop it.
Oh, you're in it.
Stop it.
Let me just go through your entire deck and take all your shit and then beat you over the head with it. Oh, great.
Joke, dude. I legitimately love Villainous Wealth. It's one of my favorite cards I've ever printed.
Yeah, Nemesis Wave is sweet.
I got a foil one at FNM, so fuck yeah, man. Let's do it.
You play one FNM, you won't shut the fuck up about it.
Oh, shit. Fuck.
God damn it.
Everything I do in Magic, I talk just way too much to Jason Hayes.
I have a joke. How do you know Marcel played FNM?
Talk about it for a second time.
Listen to a 1 hour podcast and he'll tell you four times.
Oh man, wait till I play EDH and I really get bit by that. Then you're going to hate EDH.
I liked it till Marcel started talking about it.
I should just play it just so you quit talking about it.
All right, how about this? Bonus pick of the week, Chain to the Rocks. It is seeing four of play in at least three different decks that did really well at the Pro Tour. Different archetypes completely, meaning it might be time to get in. They are bulk rares now. I can't imagine that they're going to move this week or anything. However, people are going to eventually figure out that, you know, this card is seeing enough play where the price shouldn't be that cheap.
That's a good pick because we really like those cards that are not in the new set because their supply is established. That's a good pick, man. I'm considering like having Marcel edit the podcast so I can pretend I thought of it. That's how much I like that one.
Great.
Oh, shout out to GP New Jersey because I'm gonna be there. Thank you, Jason Ewalt, for fucking twisting my arm.
No. Let's tell the people the story. So we
hold on. This is radio. We got to pump it up.
All right. So we get on. We're casually talking about like, oh yeah, Jersey, whatever. Jason's like, yeah, I'm going. I'm like, well, what the hell's in Jersey and when is this? And he's like, you know, a month away or whatever. We find out. And then I remember seeing something this morning or yesterday or whatnot. Where like Southwest is running this sicko deal. Which by the time you guys hear this, is gonna be worthless to you because it actually ends on Thursday. But all the flights were like between $49 and $150 each way. And so for Marcel, like it's $300 round trip flight to what, Jersey, right?
Yeah.
That was all it was. And I mean, so, you know, unfortunately you miss out on it. Wish we could release the podcast today to be able to get you this information, but you could book flights or you could have booked flights and got super cheap flights to pretty much any GP in the next 3 or 4 months that you wanted to. Without guilt, and instead you get to hear about it now and feel bad that you missed out on that deal.
You know, we tweeted about it, and I don't really have any sympathy for somebody that doesn't follow me on Twitter. Not getting a good tip.
Bam!
It's just kind of how I feel about it.
That's fair.
Ruthless Jason.
Hey, man. I don't like to be told, you know, how I can get people value at their convenience.
See?
I just sort of like to run it up the flagpole and be like, hey, just so you know. Here's a good tip on Twitter. You should be on the Twitter if you care about finance, folks. I know it seems stupid, but Twitter's actually.
You should be on the Twitter if you care about anything at all. Like, even if you're not super into finance, don't follow finance people. Like, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably care enough to follow the finance people. But you find out so many interesting things and you see so many cool deck brews being on Twitter. Like, there's actually zero reason anyone who plays this game shouldn't be on Twitter. Like, you don't even have to check regularly. Just get on every once in a while and look.
Bam.
And then follow us. Shout out to ourselves. Follow me on Twitter at Cripple Command, CRYPPLE Command.
Spell command for him, Corbin. You know, he would.
Corbin? Yeah, Corbin, you don't look up Corbin.
It's like C.H. Hostler. Or, I know, the H is part of
I don't think it's C.H. Hostler. That's too many
H's. It should be.
All right. Let's end this. It's done. Scratch the record.
Wiki. So this would be like we'll just fade out. The music will get louder, and people will gradually stop being able to hear what we're saying.
And then I'll abruptly lower the music, and then raise our volumes louder, and people are like, when the hell is this shit going to end? I thought it was about to end like right now, and then.
And then some smart ass in the car will say, yeah, I thought it was going to end episode 42.
It should have ended in episode 42. Man. I have to deal with you.
Why are they still listening if they wanted to end in episode 42? That's not our fault that they're a
masochist. Don't negate the premise of my joke, man.
Don't tell jokes without a good premise.
What,
you're better than that. You have highbrow humor to live up to now.
What you talk about? 42 is the meaning of life. How much more highbrow can you get? All right. Fuck you guys.
I've never even read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, so I don't know what the reference you're making.
Yeah, sorry. No way I've ever read that book.
It's not good. I highly don't recommend it.
They made a book out of that movie?
Oh, that's right. There was... Yeah. No, they made a couple of books out of that movie.
And they got new artwork for it, too.
They really just, like, ran off with the movie storyline and made some extra ones. It was kind of cool.
Oh. Speaking of extra storyline, I can't wait for the new Star Wars. That looks like it's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, that sounds like me in 1998.
And you were wrong.
But it's Disney, it's not George Lucas.
Why don't they just digitally remaster the old ones again and just re-release those? Because that was more exciting.
Just go back to episode one and take Jake Lloyd out of it entirely.
No. Just do what they did. Like, you know, it was like, what, 2 or 3 years before they released the newer ones that they digitally remastered all the old ones. And then, like, it was each summer for 3 summers in a row they re-released them in theaters. And, like, I got taken to those when I was, like, 9 or whatever, and that was the coolest thing to me to see that movie in theaters again. Like, I would actually be more happy if they announced, like, you don't have to digitally remaster it. Just be like, you know what, we're going to mass release these for theaters again. I'd be like, okay, you're right. I don't need a new Star Wars movie. I'm just going to go watch those. I would be content.
Then you watch, get rid of episode 1 and just remove that from the continuum.
Episode 1 had good parts in it, man.
Yeah, that had Jar Jar Binks, too.
Duel of the Fates was cool. Yeah, if you cut out some of the annoying shit, like...
Darth Maul was the only thing that redeemed that movie.
Darth Maul was in that movie, though.
Yeah, that's the only thing. Other than that, it's not worth the whole movie.
All right, so here's the question. Why did the Lord of the Rings franchise decide to do the same stupid move that they watched Star Wars screw up, where they gave all of, like, the battle droids these personalities and stuff, and like they added this whole, you know, Jar Jar Binks character in, and so Lord of the Rings is like, you know what we should do, instead of having these awesome fight scenes where we get a bunch of people to dress up in costumes and, you know, we make this look legitimate, now we're gonna have some really terrible looking CGI goblins that are gonna wisecrack jokes back and forth. Like, who decided that was the best idea? Because I'm not happy about the new Hobbit coming out.
Dude, I don't know, those Hobbit movies are beyond reproach. Like,
they're bad.
Oh, come on, really?
They're not that bad.
No, they are bad. Go watch them in comparison. I just rewatched the Lord of the Rings trilogy. They are not even close to the same level.
I did fall asleep in the middle of the first.
Because they're not good. They're like,
not tell
the storyline is
good.
There, obviously, because it's the Hobbit, but like, they took what could be good, don't get me wrong, like, I thought the Hobbit was gonna be awesome. I was one of the people who was just like, yeah, they're not gonna screw this up, they know what they're doing, like, they're not gonna make a Star Wars mistake. And then they, like, actually just took characters from the Star Wars universe and were like, you know what, we're gonna put a cloak on you. Here you go, Jar Jar Binks. Like, ugh, no. They're bad. They're bad. I got into this conversation earlier, so I'm already, like, a little heated about it.
So you should just go watch the Cinemassacre review on Star Wars. That is probably by far the best movie review I've ever seen in my lifetime.
Wait, what's up now?
Cinemassacre. This guy, he just tears apart the entire new trilogy and the remakes. He just breaks it down on how bad the movies actually are and gives, like, you know, scientific proof. It's well done. Check it out. I'll get you some links. I'm just going to show my coworker today because we were talking about this actually today. And like the machete order, how you're supposed to watch Star Wars to somebody new.
I actually don't agree with the machete order. I go strict chronological.
I think the machete order is actually, I rewatched it and I think it's good.
What, watching 1 through 6 straight?
You go four, five, 2, 3, 6. And the reason is, you know, you get the good action of 4 and 5, so it gets you into the series. And then, like, 2 and 3 is kind of like a flashback, so you build up the story of Darth Vader before the grand finale at the end.
Huh. That's interesting. I've never heard that before.
I subscribe by it. Because I think 1 should just be banned from existence. So, I'm in favor.
I mean, that's everyone's hope, right? Is that, like, eventually they'll just make enough of them that one ceases to exist? And, like, they'll make the rest of them that much better. But, like,
well,
I
guess
was
better than 3.
The positive, no, it wasn't. Not at all.
Yeah, it was.
3 was the best of that whole fucking...
No, 2. 2 is the one that was garbage, yeah.
No, so the real positive of all of it is, though, so, like, any movie coming out at this point, like, their expectations, like, you know, had Disney gotten a hold of Star Wars and been like, hey guys, we're going to really release some movies, and like 1, 2, 3 never been made at that point. Everyone would have been like, no, don't do that. Don't do that at all. And now people like are kind of like, well, you have Disney's budget. You have, you know, reasonable people you're putting into place. And the first thing I hear out of most people's mouth is, well, it can't be as bad as The Phantom Menace. So, I mean, that's the hype you're living up to. And that's not wrong. I mean, they really don't have a huge bar to like go over. Like, if you don't put Jar Jar Binks in your movie, you're fine.
If you don't have Lucas fucking having any, you know, creative input on your movie, you're going to be fine.
I know everything I read about Lucas actually makes me go back and respect Spielberg less. That's how bad George Lucas is. I don't know, man. I don't like any of my heroes anymore. Kevin Smith, like, seems to have made a career out of letting me down.
All right, this brings from brewery to in next week. We're out.
That's not on the cast.
Yeah, right. I don't know where the cut point is.
Maybe before we talked about Lord of the Rings for 45 minutes.
That's going to be part of the cast.
Oh, after hours maybe. That was not a good fucking Brainstorm Brewery.
Was this episode at all good Brainstorm Brewery?
Yeah, there was 50 minutes of good shit in there.
I hope. I can't do that much editing, though. I could do editing, but I can't be doing a fucking surgery.
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com.